Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and of course, Baltimore Positive, coming at you during just a crazy week here. It is springtime. We had a great baseball team out on the field. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery have Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away. We're going to be at Fadley's every Friday having crab cakes and beer before Orioles games, including this week. Luke Jones will be joining us all summer long as the pennant race heats up, and I love talking baseball, and been waiting to have this fellow on because back in April there was an anniversary of the date that Hank Aaron hit the big home run at 713, 714, and Babe Ruth back in the day before the roid rage and Barry Bonds and all that stuff, and Sammy Sosa, who we got to know a little bit around here. And I have such intimate association with that game and Al Downing and the ball going over the fence and Tom House and just all of that part of that in my childhood, because my last name is Aparicio and I was a baseball guy. And I brought that up with Luke because, you know, Luke was born in 83 and he's like, what were you doing at 74? Like, I'm like, my dad loved baseball and that game was on. It was a weeknight. It was like every night they were cutting in to live television to show that home run. And I watched that home run and I was 5 years old. I wasn't even six. And I remember that home run and I remember it. Didn't do the man on the moon. Remember a little bit of Watergate stuff. Certainly remember Sonny and Cher, you know, on Friday nights in 1973, 74 in that era. But from a baseball perspective, and I do remember the 73 World Series and La Orange and, you know, all of that. And I hated the Oakland A's. I talk about that all the time, how much I hated the Finley A's and Reggie Jackson and those teams. But that Hank Aaron home run was something. And all these years later, I had the opportunity to bring Dan Schlossberg on the program. He is has written a book on Hank Aaron. And it got offered to me about a month ago. And we did it this week. And I guess with Father's Day and holidays and baseball, certainly back on the tongue here in Baltimore and seeing Cal Ripken doff a cap, it is great to have fellow journalists. There's so few of us left. Dan Schlossberg is a lifelong Braves fan, baseball fan. He's done a lot of cool stuff around Bloomberg and a million other baseball books. Dan, it's a pleasure to have you on. I see Jimmy Carter over your shoulder. Is that you? If we're watching the podcast in between Jimmy Carter and Hank Aaron, that's a pretty cool picture, dude.
Well, I'm right over Hank Aaron's, right behind Hank Aaron's right shoulder. I was actually interviewing him when Jimmy Carter came in. The guy in the middle was the governor of Delaware, who was being hosted by Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was the governor of Georgia at that point in time. And the next
day... And that's
day,
the Fulton County locker room. I was in that locker room when the Braves won the World Series in 95. I mean, like, Ryan Klesko showered me with champagne in that locker room that night. True.
And I was there for many other happy occasions, including 1992, the Francisco Cabrera game. I won the clubhouse. The only one there was Jane Fonda. And I said, Jane, what are you doing here? She said, I didn't want to be under the pile at home plate. That was after Francisco Cabrera delivered that pennant-winning single against the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Sid Bream, right?
Sid Bream, the slowest man in the majors.
So I have a story associated with that game because I'm a Baltimore kid, and my dad took me to the 79 World Series. My dad went to 66, you know, 69, all that. The good, the bad, and the ugly, the Reds, the Mets, all that bad stuff. But I gone to the games in 79, and then I went to the games in 83, and I was in Philadelphia game five. So I watched the Orioles beat the Phillies, and that, you know, that summer, my dad died, the summer of 1992. And that was the first year of Camden Yards. It was the first year of my radio show. So I've been on the air 33 years. And that summer I got to know a lot of the players of that Oriole team, Ben McDonald being one of them, Greg Olson, just a really good band of people. Johnny Oates was involved with that team. And Brady Anderson, but David Segee, whose father played with my cousin in Boston in 73. I have a ball from 73 Red Sox when I was a little boy. Louie got me a ball, and it's got Diego Segee's autograph on it. And David Segee and I hit it off. And World Series tickets, players had access to tickets. And my buddies were all like, we all want to go to a World Series game. I was holding, and I still have the Xerox, I had a strip of Pittsburgh Pirates World Series tickets that hinged on the Pirates winning that game. So me and my buddies were all going to go up to Pittsburgh and go see the World Series, you know, in 1992. I was 23 years old at that time. And that game, like, I had to mail the tickets back, get my refund back, all that stuff. I thought I would never see a World Series game again. If I were in Baltimore, I wouldn't have. I've been to some World Series games, but that was a hell of an era, right? I mean, and you were a Braves journalist at that point.
I was a baseball journalist. I love the Braves. Every baseball journalist has a team. I mean, Mad Dog Russo loved the Giants, but he's based in New York. So answer me to that. Explain that. I've been a Braves fan since 1957 when the Milwaukee Braves beat the Yankees in the World Series. All my friends rooted for the Yankees because the Dodgers and Giants were going out to the West Coast. So I figured the Milwaukee Braves were the best team. And Hank Aaron, of course, had a great World Series, hit 393 with three home runs. Led both teams in home runs, RBIs, and batting average, but didn't get the World Series MVP because it went to Lou Burdett, who had
Lou
three
Burdett. I was
consecutive
gonna
wins.
say Lou Burdett, man.
That's
A
right.
picture of Lou Burdett's house showed up on one of these old baseball pictures that are all over. And when I have dudes like you on the show, oh my God, every picture of wacky 60s and 70s baseball lore shows up. Bill Madlock will be on my Facebook page in the next 24 hours, and I'll send you a picture. But I have so much fun. I had Ken Singleton on this week talking about baseball, and it really is era based. Like, right? Like, I was born in 1968 in Baltimore, Maryland, because my cousin came here in 1964 and brought my father, and he met a gringo in East Baltimore, and here I am. And the documentary that just came out about me tells that whole thing. But it's a period piece to me that 1973, 74 is when I got on the engine. When I think about the Orioles, I talk about them in those kind of terms and with Ken Singleton this week or with you. And it really is a basis of where your journey with baseball begins and how far back you want to go as a historian. And pieces like this, where I talk about Hank Aaron and that moment where he hit that home run, I mean, a lifetime later, you think all these years. I met Hank once. I was at the Georgia Dome, and believe it or not, I've been a journalist my whole career too, but I think this might have been a preseason Falcons Ravens game at the Georgia Dome. I attended a couple of those and a couple of Ra we didn't play often. Every 8 years we play in Atlanta, but it was at the Georgia Dome, 100 million%. Took the elevator up. I also met Billy White Shoes Johnson that day, which was a big deal for me because I was an Oilers fan with the dance and all that. But Hank Aaron was sitting in the press lounge with Ozzie Newsome. They were very close, very close. Ozzie
And he
Newsome and
rooted for
Hank.
the Ravens, by the way, because he was a Cleveland Browns fan before that.
Yeah, and they had a relationship. And I went over to the table, and Mr. Aaron, and I met him, and Ozzie introduced me to him. And I had a camera, but I didn't take a picture. Dumbass. And I felt like I wanted to leave them alone because I respect, they were having their time, and I had access. But I met Hank once, and you remember when you meet Hank Aaron, man. You remember when you meet Muhammad Ali.
Well, it's really true. In working on this book, I talked to John Schuerholz quite a bit. And I said to John, when you were the general manager of the Braves, weren't you Hank Aaron's boss? And he said, nobody's the boss of Hank Aaron.
Ha. John Schuerholz of Baltimore, Maryland, of Towson University,
That's right.
East Side. I love John. I always love the Hall of Famer, John Schuerholz. Love bringing him on as well. So give me your entry point, because I tell people my entry point was, Rusty Staub, Buddy Harrelson, like the Felix Mion, that the hating those A's teams that beat the Orioles and beat Earl Weaver and Jim Palmer in that era. But where's your entry point? Where did you grow up and stuff? And where did Hank Aaron fit into the Willie, Mickey, and the Duke in your life?
I grew up in Passaic, New Jersey, home of the Shirelles.
Ha
Everybody knows
ha.
the Shirelles. Soldier Boy, dedicated to the one I love. Many, many other songs. But anyway, in 1965, I was a sports editor at the Hilltop Star at Passaic High School, and I decided I wanted to do an article on sportsmanship by interviewing Bobby Bregan, the manager of the Braves. I was already a Braves fan because, as I told you, became a fan in 1957 with the Milwaukee Braves. So
But was everybody on your
I let her
block
back. I
was
got a letter back
a
from
Yankees fan at that? The Mets didn't
Yankees.
exist, right?
That's right. The Mets didn't exist until 62. So anyway, I got a letter back from Bobby Bregan, and he said, come to Shea Stadium at that point, and we'll do an interview. And I went there, and that's when I officially met Hank Aaron. I was 17 years old at the time, and already a rabid fan of Hank Aaron. And I befriended him. We stayed friends for his entire career from that point on. So that's from 1965 on. I have pictures in the book that I took when he went to Jarry Park to play the expansion Expos in 1969. And it was just fabulous. And as you see in the picture behind my head, there's Jimmy Carter. I was interviewing Aaron when he walked in and said, Aaron said, "Excuse me, I need to talk to the governor." And that's what happened. Been friends with him all those years and took a lot of great pictures. And every time somebody said, "Willie Mickey or the Duke," I said, "You mean Hank Aaron."
Yeah. And I guess that is, look, I'm in a baseball town, right? Where, you know, my cousin's in the Hall of Fame. He doesn't have a statue here because, like, Chicago's his place, right? And yeah. Hank had Milwaukee and then Atlanta and then back to Milwaukee, where I saw Hank play. I should also brag, because I did brag about this when he passed. When Hank passed, I called a lot of people and talked to baseball people in my life about Hank. And I saw Hank play for the 76 Brewers. My father took me out of the doubleheader. I love Sixto Lescano. He was my favorite player. I also like Gorman Thomas and stuff till they stuck it up our backsides in 82 and knocked us out of the playoffs. But I saw Hank play. And my father, it was imperative when he was a DH at the end of his career that my father took me out. And I actually looked up the date because I remembered it being a doubleheader. It was a twilight doubleheader. And so I looked it up and I found the date. And it was sort of like trying to match tickets up if I had the actual ticket from that game, because I think I might. But nonetheless, you remember these moments, especially when you lose your father and you're in a baseball sort of situation. I'm 55 now, and read up on me and Peter Angelos at some point when you get the opportunity, Dan, and in Baltimore, and what we've been through here. But here we have the arguments of Brooks, Cal. I have said Palmer's the greatest Oriole ever, and I take heat for that, but look it up. I mean, you can read the stats, and now we start to measure the Adley Rutschmans and the Jackson Holidays and where the young people will take the next thing and say, who are we going to have statues of around here? We have Johnny U. We have twisted history in Baltimore anyway because of Johnny U and the Ravens and Ray Lewis on the same plaza, purple and blue and all of that. But Hank Aaron being sort of left out a little bit of that piece of lore, when it never was my thought. Hank Aaron, from the time I was 6 years old and he hit that home run, and my dad, because we're also in Baltimore, right? So my dad would take me down to the Babe Ruth birthplace, right? And the Babe Ruth, and I met Harmon Killebrew there when I was a kid. And my dad would say, there's Babe Ruth and there's Hank Aaron. And I collected baseball cards. My dad was a stat nerd. My dad gave me the Science of Hitting and Ted Williams. And like, that's the family I grew up in. And, but Hank, to me, when I collected baseball cards, a Hank Aaron card was a Mickey Mantle card to me because he was my Mickey Mantle, and Brooks couldn't measure up to Hank. Brooks probably would say to me, I was a high level ball player, but I wasn't Hank, you know, like players understood Hank, but why aren't there more books on him? You know, you wrote a book on Hank Aaron. I'm like, a billion Mickey Mantle books. And most people would tell you Hank was a better player than Mickey Mantle.
This is true. Well, Hank played for small market teams. He started out in Milwaukee. He was actually in Milwaukee longer than he was in Atlanta, but he never played in New York or Los Angeles or even Chicago. So you're playing a small market. And if you're a humble guy, which he was almost an introverted guy, he was overlooked. I mean, Willie Mays was very charismatic. I don't think he was the player Hank Aaron was. I don't think anybody was the player Hank Aaron was. Certainly nobody I saw. My career started in 1969.
For modern baseball and how twisted the stats have gotten, to see 714 legitimate home runs or 755 legitimate home runs in a lifetime, to be a little older than I, let's say, that you really remember Frank Robinson as a rookie or Mickey Mantle or the things that happened in the 50s and 60s. Now, I grew up, my father was born in 1919 in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He was born in Elmira, New York, but primarily Scranton. Chicken in every pot, never voted for Republican because he stood in the soup line starving in 1929 when he was a kid. But my father told me about taking the train into New York to see Babe Ruth play. So my father saw Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, like all of that, because that's what you did in Scranton when your dad loved baseball and you had a dollar to get to the city. You went in to see the Yankees play from wherever you were in the Northeast if you loved baseball in the 20s and 30s and after the war and all of that. So I had those stories in my life. About the lore of Babe Ruth in Baltimore, obviously, but Babe and Hank in my household in the 70s in a real baseball house, that was the measurement. And again, I saw Frank Robinson play at the end as a manager and player at Cleveland. Like, it's great players that were identified to me as great players. And there were stats. And my dad was a Baseball Digest guy. My dad had the baseball encyclopedia. You know, my dad read the Bronx Zoo out loud to me when I was 10. So, like, baseball stats indicated to me that Hank was the greatest. You know, like, that you could collect the Willie Mays card, or, you know, pick whoever you want. Mantle, Whitey Ford, like these great players of that era. But Hank, to me, was the standard, even though Mickey Mantle's cards went for more because he was a Yankee and they played in October every year, right?
Well, Hank Aaron was an all-star 25 times. Nobody ever did that. 25 times. And 21 years in a row, he was not an all-star his first year or his last year. But every other year he played, he was on the all-star team. Now, 8 times he didn't start the all-star game. There was somebody named Roberto Clemente, I believe.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he wasn't bad. And Frank Robinson, too. So 8 times Hank didn't start. He should have. And also on the Hall of Fame ballot, he was left off the ballot by 9 voters. He should have been a unanimous selection, no doubt.
Racism. Let's talk about racism, Dan Schlossberg.
There
what
you
would
go.
What would you know about that? And what would you know about Mobile, Alabama at that time? And, you know, I got to know a guy named C.J. Mosley, who was a first-round draft pick for the Ravens. He was from Mobile. I've been to Mobile for Senior Bowl when Phil Savage was running it back in the day. And lovely little town, delicious oysters and seafood, you know, much like Baltimore or Maryland. But, you know, Hank coming out of there at that point and understanding a little bit. I've been to Kansas City to the museum there. And, you know, I
Great
subscribe.
Museum.
Yeah, like Hank came from an era where that easily, had the thing hung on 10 more years, we'd be talking about him differently and where race was in this country. And even the night of the home run, famously, those two gentlemen that came to pat him on the back, that Hank may have thought they were coming with a gun or a knife, right?
Well, he once told Dusty Baker and Ralph Garr, who were young outfielders at the time, not to sit next to him in the dugout in case he shot during the game. So that tells you a lot about what was going on. And all the hate mail he got, almost 1 million pieces of mail one year. He even got a plaque from the U.S. Postal Service for getting the most mail of any civilian, not a politician. It was just terrible. And he started his career he was signed by the Boston Braves. He started his career in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, but then he played for Jacksonville of the Sally League. And that league was all white at the time. He and Felix Mion and one other black player went down there to integrate the league. And he put up all kinds of abuse, but he still won the MVP award that year. And the next year he was in the Milwaukee Braves in spring training. Bobby Thompson broke his ankle, and Hank Aaron, who was an infielder in the minor leagues, suddenly became a starting outfielder, and he never left.
So writing this book, obviously a labor of love, right? You write a lot of books about a lot of different things. You had this relationship with Hank. Why here and now? And tell me what the book contains that, quite frankly, makes me want to read the book, because I like learning about things like this.
Well, I got to tell you, there have been a few books on Hank Aaron, too, including one that I wrote in 1974 called Hammer and Hank. But this book is different than all the other books, including mine, because it's not written in chronological order. It's written by subjects, such as great managers, teammates, great moments, April 8th, 1974. They're all different chapters. Each one is written as if it were a separate magazine article. It's the only Hank Aaron book that's like that.
Well, modern baseball here is back on our tongue. Where do you reside? Are you in Atlanta?
I'm still in New Jersey. Haven't left. In fact, I went to the Braves series in New York this past weekend.
And you remain a Braves lifer?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Nice. Well, I mean, for anybody who's an Oriole fan here and has been through this journey here with the good, the bad, and the ugly, and as a Braves fan, you've been through, you know, Ted Turner, Turner Field, Bob Horner, going back to, you know, Chief Nakahoma, you know, Winalata, the whole deal, right? Modern baseball and the game itself and man on second base in the 10th inning and how we're using pitching and all that aside, we've had a real rebirth with a new owner here in the last month. Give me your 50,000 foot view from the outside of Baltimore, Baltimore Orioles, where the Orioles are and all this, because they're damn good all of a sudden. And for old guys like us, we remember them being good, but this has been just a rotten period of time with Camden Yards and the potentiality of what it all could have been, but now what it could be again. And I'm still young enough and strong enough to get down to the ballpark for a parade if there's such a thing. But we haven't been able to talk about things like that in Baltimore in a long time. And I always like getting the perspective from the outside because the Orioles have become a hell of a conversation around the whole baseball world. And sometimes even in Baltimore, we're having a hard time coming to grips with that because it's been so long.
Well, I'm a national baseball writer for Forbes.com, and I have to write 10 columns a month. And every one of those columns has to mention money. And when you look at the Orioles payroll and where it ranks among the 30 teams, I believe it's next to last, or maybe 28 out of 30. That says volumes of how they're doing, how smart they are, how player development works, how many great young players they have who are starters, like Rutschman and so many others. The Orioles are a young team. They're going to be around for a long time because 6 years of service with these guys before they can become free agents. So the Orioles have done a great job, and they rebounded from nothing to probably being the best team in the American League.
Yeah, it's a time of prosperity to even 3 summers ago. Do I want to have Dan on to talk about baseball in May? Well, you know, we got the Capitals. We got, you know, Preakness this week. We got, you know, other things going on. Baseball has become a much bigger priority. And I think in people's lives here because it's relevant and it's rewarding and you're having fun with it and the players seem like decent guys and you get out of the ballpark and you're not giving money to Angelos anymore and all that, that it does open the door for Hank Aaron stories and Cal Ripken stories and comparison and contrast that John Harbaugh doesn't like to compare anything to anything. That's the beauty of baseball, is saying where is Hank Aaron against whomever, Aaron Judge, for crying out loud, right?
Well, I got to tell you, Aaron and Ripken are comparable because they both went after very significant records. I mean, Ripken, obviously, with the consecutive games playing streak. And during that streak, I wanted to do a story. I wanted to interview Ripken about his memories of other ballparks, just talking about ballparks. And I promised his agent, John Maroon, that I was not going to ask Cal about the streak. And so Cal promised that he would come up to West Palm Beach, it was during spring training, and do an interview, exclusive interview with me, at West Palm Beach Municipal Stadium, which no longer exists. And he came up, we did the interview, just the two of us in the clubhouse. And at the end of the interview, Cal thanked me. I said, "Why are you thanking me?" He said, "You kept your word. You didn't ask me anything about the streak. I got so tired about answering all those questions." And it was the same with Aaron. Every day, the same questions over and over and over again. And I was actually at a press conference where a woman reporter said to him, "Mr. Aaron, would you tell us whether you bat right-handed or left-handed?" That was the last question he would take.
Well, you know, and that's part of, I've covered several manias. I've been at this a long time, including Fernando Mania, which I watched on TV, which is my favorite mania. But I was around Ripken all of that time during the streak from 92 through 95, the strike, Angelos buying the team, Davey Johnson, you know, Johnny Oates went to work for George Bush, and I had the same situation. I was with Johnny Oates in the clubhouse at the All-Star game in Arlington when he was the manager of the Rangers, and George Bush walked in and Johnny introduced me to him. He's like, "Meet my boss." So, you know, meeting presidents. I mean, I met Bill Clinton when he's thrown out the first pitch before Washington had a team. Baseball has this regal part and place in like America, and it had that in Baltimore in such a special way, right? For so long during that period of time with Camden Yards coming online and whatnot. And it's just a joy to be talking about it in that way again, and to be regaling maybe a newer audience with stories about what Hank Aaron represented and the stature that he held in American lore and why he's important in a lot of ways. I mean, and bringing his story to life, it is baseball's story, Hank Aaron's story.
And I got to mention something else about Ripken, because there's another Braves tie with Cal Ripken. To me, Dale Murphy was the National League's version of Cal Ripken. Never swore, never drank, never argued with the umpires. A very polite guy, a humble guy, modest guy. But he's been left out of the Hall of Fame for no apparent reason. He won back-to-back MVP awards. To me, he's the number one guy on my list of top 10 players left out of the Hall of Fame. But he's the National League's Cal Ripken. I always use that analogy.
Yeah, and he was a catcher when he started, too. Like, and I had Dale in my studio back in the 90s. He came for Tops in Sports because he had He was one of the great players of all time. I'm stunned he's not in. And again, and I'm a baseball guy, and Harold Baines is in, and McGriff waiting a million years, and I mean, the Pete Rose thing also is, there's a real dividing line with Pete Rose and steroids about the Hall of Fame, that to the point that it's the value of the Hall of Fame. And my last name's Aparicio, Dan. I mean, it's made the Hall of Fame flimsy to me.
Well, now that baseball has embraced gambling, I think Pete Rose should get another look. Although his problem was he lied for so many years. That's the biggest problem. If he would have said, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, he'd be in the Hall of Fame today.
He made a lot less money than signing all his autographs up in Cooperstown around the corner all these years. Dan, a pleasure to have you on. I want to promote the book and let everybody know that it's out there. It's available. Home Run King, the remarkable record of Hank Aaron. Here, I'm going to pull it up on the Amazon line here so everybody can see it, feel it a little bit. It's a beautiful picture of Hank for, what's that, maybe 57, 58? Where's that? What year's that picture from?
Oh no, it's later.
Mid-50s.
See the A on the hat. The Braves moved to Atlanta in 66, so it's got to be.
Oh,
But
wow.
note that Dusty Baker wrote the foreword, and he was wrote a beautiful personalized foreword for me.
He looks so young in this picture to me, but now I see the A. Absolutely. Well,
It's the A for his baseball ability too. Straight A guy.
now, what do you love about baseball these days, Dan? I mean, the changing. I love that it can get over in 2.5 hours. I love that the pitchers have to throw the baseball. I do love that part of it. I don't like the pickoff rule.
I don't like the pickoff rule either, but the worst rule of all is that what I call the Manfred man, the extra inning ghost runner, that is an abomination. And the sooner Manfred is not commissioner anymore, the better.
The Manfred man, blinded by the light. I like all of this. See, I get to be a baseball nerd all over again. It's so much fun. Dan Schlossberg is here. He's still a Braves fan because that's what we do when we're baseball fans. And your beautiful relationship with Hank Aaron. I had a similar relationship with Tony Gwynn. My aunt lived near the stadium in San Diego, and I was young, and the girls were pretty in Southern California, and the Padres were awful, but they were run by the Baltimore people. Larry Lucchino and all those people went out there. Eddie Epstein, just a bunch of great people, Mel Proctor. So I always felt at home in San Diego, and Tony Gwynn was just such a beautiful guy. And anything that Barry Bloom's like has all these great stories about Tony Gwynn. So for any of you who spent the kind of quality time you did to tell these stories, they're worthwhile, and I wish you a lot of success with your book.
Thank you very much, Lester, and thank you for having me on.
Dan Schlossberg. See, I thought he was in Atlanta or something like, and it turns out he's in Passaic, New Jersey, like Springsteen. And quoting some Springsteen around here, the remarkable record of Hank Aaron, written by Dan Schlossberg, Home Run King, gives me a chance to talk baseball all over again. All this baseball fever is a lot of fun for me. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore sports. And makes me want to go out and get that 1974 first card in that set with Hank Aaron on it, with that remarkable record. Stay with us.